I will come back again to chapter number 2. As I told you, first 6 chapters are bishopy chapters. And the argument in this 6 chapters is a winding argument. Therefore, in order to get a clear idea of the thread of the argument, it is necessary to go deeper into the actual shlokas, verses. Now, the second chapter is entitled Sankhya Yoga. The reason is that it discusses two yogas at the same time. The yoga which is called Sankhya and the yoga which is called Yoga. As Sri Krishna would explain later on, the Sankhya Yoga is Jnana Yoga and Yoga is Karma Yoga.
The same thing.
It's called Karma Yoga. So this chapter is devoted to Jnana Yoga and Karma Yoga. The instrument by which this yoga is to be accomplished is buddhi, the intelligent will. Intelligent will applied in Jnana Yoga and intelligent will applied in Karma Yoga. The instrument here is the same, but application is different. In Jnana Yoga, the intelligent will is applied to the processes of knowledge. In Karma Yoga, intelligent will is applied to the processes of action. As a result of this, there are two different results. In the Jnana Yoga, you attain to the knowledge. In Karma Yoga, you get perfection of action. Now, what is the knowledge that is gained by applying buddhi, intelligent will, to the processes of knowledge? If you see, I am taking specially a few verses which are very famous. Some are not so famous but are very important. In order to get the mastery over the texts, I shall refer to those important ones. So I will request you to open verse number 16 in second chapter. 216, page number 68. Nasato vidyate bhavo na bhavo vidyate sataha. Now this sentence is one of the most famous sentences of the Bhagavad Gita. It lays down the basic knowledge that one has to attain and which is indisputable. That is to say, even if you allow your mind to think most freely without any assumption, most undogmatically, then this is the statement which will automatically get established. It is something which you cannot refuse, because to refuse it will be the refusal of intellect itself. Nasato vidyate bhavo na bhavo vidyate sataha. That which exists, exists. That which does not exist. This is the basic, very simple statement. That which exists can never become non-existent. That is the meaning of existence. That which really exists can never become non-existent. That which is really non-existent can never come into existence. This is the starting point of the knowledge. You try to reject this proposition and you will see you have been obliged to establish a thing. Now, the next one, I am only referring to that sentence which is the most famous one and which is most central. the knowledge that you gain by Gyan Yoga is fundamentally this. That which exists, exists. That which does not exist, does not exist. Of that which exists, it can never have non-existence. That which does not exist, of that there can never come about an existence. Now, this existence, in other words, is something different from manifestation. In manifestation, that which exists now ceases to be tomorrow or thereafter, hereafter, any moment. And that which manifests now did not exist 1 minute ago, 1 second ago. Therefore, when you arrive at true knowledge, you are able to make a distinction between the existence and manifestation, so that you become free from the arresting concentration in which we are involved in manifestation. All the time we are engaged in manifestation, where things are born and things die. As Sri Aurobindo says, that the movement of manifestation is so rapid that things seem to pass away even before we observe them. It's a fleeting movement of manifestation. And things come to manifest, and before you can even grasp, they are gone. Some new things have come up immediately. What Sri Krishna wants to say is that if you want to deal with life properly, you should be able to come out of the arrestation of manifestation and go back or go behind and discover what really exists. And that which really exists can never cease to exist. And that which does not exist can never come into existence. Now, if you apply this sentence to manifestation, you will find that that which did not exist comes into existence. That which exists goes out of existence. Therefore, it means that that which manifests is not really existence. It is something different. That is why manifestation is for phenomena. That which exists is called essence. That which is essence always remains. Essence can never die. The distinction between essence and phenomena is what is called Sankhya knowledge. Sankhya knowledge is the knowledge of discrimination, distinction between essence and phenomena. Now, normally we do not see anything that does not manifest. That means that we are arrested in a state which is not a state of knowledge. There is a beautiful dialogue in Plato's book called Republic. Now, Republic is supposed to be one of the greatest works of intellectual thought in the world. The climactic point of intellect is supposed to have been reached in this book, Republic, where the main speaker is Socrates. It's a dialogue. And in this book, one of the most important arguments is related to the question, what is it that can be known? And the ultimate answer that is given is, you can know only what is. Can that which is not be ever an object of knowledge? To be known, the object must be present to be known. how can that which is not an object be ever known? So Socrates' answer to the question is, you can know only what is. That which is not is never an object of knowledge. Therefore, the question of his knowledge even does not arise. The only thing that can be known is that which is. And then Socrates points out that that which is manifested, that which is present before us, is not. It is and it is not. So that can never become the object of knowledge. That which is and is not can never become the object of knowledge. So he makes a distinction between what is called knowledge and opinion. That which is and is not, you can have an opinion about it, but you can never have the knowledge of it. In order to have the knowledge, you should have the knowledge of the essence, which is always there, in spite of all manifestations. Now, this is the basic thesis of Plato, spoken through the mouth of Socrates' teacher. In other words, according to Plato, reality is that which always eternally is. That which is a phenomenon cannot really be known, but you can only have an opinion about. So, he believes and he points out that all so-called knowledge of the world, about which we are constantly moving about here and there, ultimately hangs only on opinion. Human beings normally run their life by opinions. And so long as they are run by opinions, you never have the mastery over things. The mastery comes only when you can discover what is. The things of the world are neither beautiful nor ugly. They are mixtures. The real knowledge is only the knowledge of beauty, which forever is. The true knowledge is always about the good, which always is. The knowledge is always about the truth, and truth is that which is forever. He makes a distinction between truth and facts. Normally, when we state any statement about facts, we say, I have spoken the truth. But facts are in a fleeting condition. They are not. So, according to Plato, that which is present now as a fact, you can never really know, because it is a fleeting fact. That which is now and tomorrow it is not there, or next moment it is not there. In order to know, you must know what is. Now, this theory of Plato and this statement of the Bhagavad Gita are often compared with each other. There is even a theory that Plato learnt a great deal of his own philosophy by discussing with Indians. It is said that Indians used to travel from India to Greece in early times. And surely Plato lived much after the Bhagavad Gita, much after Sri Krishna, historically. Therefore, it is said that the whole philosophy of Republic, which is supposed to be the pinnacle of human thought, is a commentary upon this sentence of the Bhagavad Gita. That is why the importance of this little sentence, which says with such a tremendous surety, Nasatu vidyate bhavo nabhavo vidyate sadaha. That which exists, exists. That which does not exist, does not exist. The one who is the wise one, one who is established in knowledge, makes a distinction between existence and phenomena. Now the relevance of this sentence is in the Bhagavad Gita the following. The entire argument of Arjuna was, I shall not fight. I shall not fight because here is my grandfather, here is my teacher, and I am now supposed to kill them. In other words, the question was that they are now, and after I administer my battle weapons, they will be destroyed, they will not be anymore. So his whole argument was based upon this, that that which are will not be. And he was claiming in his argument that his whole thought was sublime and supreme thought. In order to counteract this illusion about himself, that he was speaking the language of the wisest, in order to tell Arjuna that you are speaking the words of the wise, but you are not really wise. Why? Because the wise people do not argue in the way in which you are arguing. That which is, always remain. That which is not, will never come into existence. That which is now and which will disappear afterwards, is only a phenomenon. Therefore, the wise people will have first of all put down this sentence, not the sentence that you are speaking. They are and they will not be. This is not the way in which the wise people will start their argument. They will first state this, that which exists, exists. That which does not, does not. This is the starting point of Sri Krishna's argument in order to demolish the illusion in which Arjuna was arguing. Arjuna had felt while arguing, Nakankshe Rajyam, Nakankshe Sukham. I do not wish the kingdom, I do not wish the happiness. This is the statement which seems to be the statement of one who is risen very high. And then he begins to argue that here are the people who are and who will not be. So Sri Krishna says that if you are speaking the language of the wise, then I will first give you the first premise. You have no premise first of all. I will give you the first premise. In any argument, there must be a premise. Then there must be a minor statement. And then comes a conclusion. This is the logical process of argument. In any argument, there must be a premise. Then there must be a secondary statement. And by mixture of these two statements, you come to the conclusion. So, in effect, what Sri Krishna tells Arjuna is, you have no starting point of argument. You are starting arguments with minor propositions. There is no major premise, no major proposition. So, now Sri Krishna supplies the major premise. So start with the premise, that which is, always is. That which is not, does not come into existence. That which is can never go out of existence. Of non-existence there can be no existence. Of existence there can be no non-existence. Now start with this statement, now you argue. Your conclusion will be quite different. And this, he says, is by buddhi. If you apply your intellectual argumentation properly, then you will discriminate between that which is and that which is not. Or that which is a phenomenon, which is and which is not.
If by the argument charge, he starts, Krishna starts that 11th shloka. Prajna vadam prabhasi gata suna gata sushtya nanu shochanti pandita. And then he comes to Nasato Vidyate Bhavuna Bhavuna.
This is the starting point of the. He says, that you speak the language of the wise. But those who are really wise, they do not think of that which is, which goes away.
He starts with that.
He says, you are starting with that which is and which will not be. But the wise people start their argument with the right statement, namely that which is and which can never go away. So start with that statement. Those who are wise, you are speaking the language of the wise, but you are not taking the premise of the wise. So I am now supplying you the premise of the wise. That is why the importance of this statement, which is very simple, and intellectually it is supposed to be invincible. You cannot conquer it. As I told you, Plato, he is supposed to be the greatest thinker of the world. And he came to the conclusion that that which is, that which is not can never be. Therefore, that which manifests and that which is and is not, you cannot know, you can only have an opinion about. But that which you can know is only that which is. So it is supposed to be, as it were, a commentary on the Bhagavad Gita, this statement of Plato. And this is the statement that was written long, long ago. And therefore, it is supposed to be the real starting point of thought. No thought can even be sustained without a positive statement. If you put in logical terms, logic is concerned with the structure of sentences. And structure of the sentences captures the reality. This is the meaning of logic. Whatever is real, if it is captured properly in your sentence, then your sentence is right. Whether the reality is captured or not, how do you determine? By looking at the way in which a sentence is structured. Now you will find that every statement is a statement referring to what is. You take any amount of sentences in the world. Ultimately, by implication or by directly. Even when you say, lion, you have not used the word is. But the very fact that you point out lion is a demonstration of something that exists. Even when you say it is not, now the question is, what is it that is not? The word is not can be understood only in the context of is. Therefore, logically, it is impossible to escape one word, and that is. Thought cannot have any birth even if there is no is in the world. And that which is what Sri Krishna says, that which is. That which is not. Looks very simple, but it is the entire philosophical structure depends upon this statement. And in fact, the whole argument of the Gita is based upon this. If you want to know the truth, the right and the wisest, which Arjuna was claiming to start with, so Sri Krishna said that if you really want to be delivered from moha, from depression, then you must go to the very first major premise. And that premise is called the premise of knowledge. That premise of knowledge is arrived by buddhi, by intelligent will, applied to the processes of knowledge. That is simply called sankhya. Sankhya is nothing but a process of discrimination. The word Sankhya comes from the word Sankhya. Sankhya is enumeration. And the basic enumeration is that which is and that which is not. There's a basic enumeration in the world.
So you mean that inspired by this, he might have read this, he was a philosopher, but he's inspired by this comfort as far as manifestation.
That is my personal belief. That I because also, after studying both Indian thought and Western thought, I have come to the conclusion that Socrates was a teacher of Plato. And Socrates used to teach, used to converse with a number of Indians who used to come to Greece. So, there is no doubt that there was a kind of intellectual commerce between India and Greece. Not only commerce of goods, but also commerce of thought. That is why it is said that the teaching of the Gita, which is based upon Upanishads, was responsible for the highest thought that you find in Greek thought. And that is why it is possible to synthesize the East and the West. Today we speak of the great divergence between East and West. But if you go to the depths, you will find that it is very easy to bring East and West together if you really know the Indian thought in its highest and Western thought at its highest. Wherever there is a great opposition, it is because we are not going to the depth of the matter. Therefore, there is a lot of opposition. When you go to the depth of the matter, you will find a real synthesis. So this is the starting point. I am not yet discussing the question of manifestation, that which is and which is not. That which is in manifestation is not non-existent. Because that which is non-existent does not even come into existence. So there is a distinction between that which is not, and that which is not. And the battlefield is a strong example of that which is not. It is something in which things happen so fast, the order of things immediately begins to change as soon as the battle starts. What is the status of that is also a very important subject matter of the Bhagavad Gita. But that which is not can be understood properly only when you first establish yourself on that which is eternally present. Then everything else will be understood properly. Now karma is action. And action is something which is fleeting all the time. Therefore action is always phenomenal. It is concerned with which is not. That which is not can never be grasped, can never be conquered, can never be mastered unless you go to Sankhya. That is why Karma Yoga can never be perfect unless there is Jnana Yoga. Sankhya and Yoga must be always together. That is why the chapter itself is called Sankhya Yoga. He says that the secret of action is in knowledge. And that is why Sri Krishna again and again tells Arjuna, knowledge is far superior to action. Buddhi is far more important than action. And this is what confuses Arjuna again and again. His argument is that if knowledge is far superior to action, then let me be settled in knowledge. Why do you throw me into this action? If buddhi is far superior to action, let me be settled in buddhi and let me be settled in jnana. Why do you throw me into idam ghoram karma? This is the ghora karma, terrible action. Why do you enjoin me into it?
Sri Krishna's answer is that there is a kind of a hierarchy. The basic hierarchy starts with the first statement, which is on eternal existence. If you are not settled into that, then other intermediate stages can never be mastered. Action is never primary. If action was primary, Sri Krishna would have said that action is far superior. And Sri Krishna says that action is not far superior. What is superior is knowledge. And if you say that I want knowledge, I am congratulating you. You must be in knowledge. Only you are speaking the word of the wise without being wise. That is the only objection I have.
Yes.
I have no objection to wisdom. But you are speaking the words of wisdom, so I am setting you right. Words of wisdom start with this statement, that which is. And you are constantly talking of that which is not. Therefore, to contradict the statement, first of all, you start with the right proposition. The secret of Karma Yoga, Jnana Yoga and Bhakti Yoga can be properly understood if you really know what is reality. The entire Bhagavad Gita ultimately rests on this. Attain to the supreme knowledge. When you attain to the supreme knowledge, then you have the mastery over action. And when there is mastery over action, there is nothing but joy. Where there is joy, there is no grief. And Arjuna, his whole state was a state of grief. And he says to Sri Krishna, please remove grief from me. That is why Sri Krishna takes the argument of Arjuna, shows the inconsistencies in the argument, shows the deficiencies in his propositions, and says that in these propositions in which you are living, there is bound to be grief. The grief disappears where there is highest action. And highest action is possible only when there is the highest knowledge. This is the hierarchical relationship. Action is never supreme. What is supreme is knowledge. And knowledge is only about that which is. Therefore, unless you are establishing that which is, you can never be a master of action. You must be so established in your being that you can never perish. And you must see that nothing really perishes in the world. When you see that which is, according to Sri Krishna, that is a real seeing. Even when things are fleeting, see the eternal which is in fleeting, then you have really seen. So long only as you see only that which is fleeting, you are not seeing. It is all running away. Only when you see that which is stable in movement, then only you have really seen. The reality is Sat Chit Ananda. In the Bhagavad Gita, the word Sat Chit Ananda does not occur. But the entire idea of Krishna is that the supreme reality, Purushottama, is stable, that which is always present. That this reality is capable of manifestation. In other words, there is a distinction between the stable, the eternal, and the manifestation. And manifestation can be rightly grasped only when you have seen the stable, when you can master the stability. That is why the Bhagavad Gita constantly emphasizes one word, sthira, sthita pratyaya, samatva, be absolutely stable. Now, on the basis of Sat, jit rests. The reality Satchidananda, three words, Sat, Chit and Ananda. But Chit is secondary. Ananda is tertiary. Primary is Sat. This is the relationship of in reality. Reality is complex. And the complexity of reality is that there is a primary and basic stuff, that which is always and which never disappears. That is Sat. The Chit is an activity of two kinds. Activity of knowledge and activity of will. That is why in India, Chit is always used as Chit Shakti. Activity of knowledge and activity of will. Now, even between knowledge and will, there is an interrelationship. Primary is knowledge. Will is secondary. You can never have the will without the basic stuff of knowledge. Even ignorant people who do not have the knowledge, if you examine their will will have been established on wrong knowledge. But knowledge is the basis. There is no will anywhere which has not behind it some kind of a conscious will, consciousness, some kind of knowledge. It may be wrong knowledge, false knowledge, erroneous knowledge, illusory knowledge, anything, but unless there is a knowledge, there cannot be any will. That is the relationship between the two. So, if you make something primary, which is not primary, everything will go topsy-turvy. That is why Sri Krishna puts all the things in the hierarchy. Karma Yoga is always secondary. Primary is Jnana Yoga. Without Jnana Yoga, you cannot have a true Karma Yoga. And Ananda, which is the result of what is called Bhakti, devotion, is always tertiary, it is always a crown. Bhakti is always a crown. Therefore, in the Bhagavad Gita, what is primary is Jnana Yoga. What is crown is bhakti. In the middle is karma yoga. Even karma yoga ends in a crown of bhakti. Even jnana in its crown ends into bhakti. As Sri Krishna will tell us, that the highest bhakta is jnani. One who has known, only he can really be the highest bhakta. Now, that which is crown is always the fundamental motivation. That which is crown is not the foundation, but motivation. Foundation is always Sat. Therefore, Jnana is always the foundation. But motivation, when you really want the right motivation, it can come only from Bhakti. When you are real Bhakta, then you become the most powerful warrior in the world, the most powerful actor in the world, when you are motivated. That is why it is said that if you really want the unfailing motivation, that which never dies, that comes only from highest devotion. And that too, a devotion which is irresistible. Even in ordinary life, the highest motivation comes from love, which is simply for the sake of love. Not for this or for that or for that. Then that becomes unfailing motivation. Even the ordinary love stories in the world are based upon these fundamental points. Whether it is Laila Majnu or any other kind of story, fundamental motivation arises from love that can never fail. And there is no fleeting of that love. It is based upon Sat. It is based upon Chit. And it is motivated constantly by love that never fails. Now, to put these relationships is a task of the whole of the Gita. Very often we are baffled by statements of the Gita, and you find that here Sri Krishna says, Jnana Yoga is supreme. Here he says, Karma Yoga is supreme. Here he says, Bhakti Yoga is supreme. But these words have to be understood in their interrelationship.
Can I ask?
Yes.
What do you mean by motivation?
Motivation is the fundamental reason for action. There is a distinction between intention and motive. I intend to go to the library. But what is the motive? To read a book. If I have no motive to read the book, I may not have the intention to go to the library. Intention is always a kind of an intermediary between motive and action. That which is behind intention is motive. And that which is fulfilled in action is the motive. Not the intention, but the motive. Therefore, if you ask anybody, how are you motivated? Intentions are many. I may be motivated to learn something. Now, that learning can come either by going to library, or by contemplation, or by satsanga, by somebody who knows, I meet him and discuss with him and gain. These are all intentions. I intend to go to library, I intend to contemplate, I intend to sit with somebody. But what is the motive? Motive is the gaining of knowledge, which is ultimately satisfied. And when it is satisfied, what is the conclusion? Ananda. The real joy is...
That's how the love comes into it.
That's right. Ananda and love are interchangeable. Love is nothing but fundamentally a joy of union. But fundamentally, all love is joy. There is ananda. Love is a manifestation of ananda. Therefore, Sri Krishna says, bhakti is the highest. Highest from what point of view? It is the crown. And it is the motive. If you are considering the question of motive and the crown, bhakti is the highest. But bhakti for what? For the supreme. And supreme is what? That which is the highest object of knowledge. Therefore, what is the crown here? What is the base foundation? Not the crown, but foundation. Foundation is the supreme. Love for the supreme is the crown, is the highest. But what is the foundation? Foundation is jnana. Therefore, jnana is supreme. Without that jnana, you cannot have that bhakti either. Therefore, Sri Krishna says, only jnani can become the supreme bhakta. Foundation is jnana. So if you want to use the words at all, you should say that according to Bhagavad Gita, Jnana Yoga is foundational. Bhakti Yoga is the crowning. And Karma Yoga is intermediate. That which should be founded in knowledge, that which should culminate in bhakti. And in the intermediates, when you have both knowledge and devotion as the supports, that action is the highest. And that which is not manifesting in action is not supreme. Therefore, if you want to manifest in manifestation, karma yoga is the highest. But in manifestation, when you come to manifestation, in manifestation, one who simply sits quiet is not in his right position. In action, if he simply says, well, I'll go on loving, that is not the highest. In foundation, if he simply says, I want to know and therefore I'm satisfied with knowledge, perfectly all right. That is foundational. So the question is, when you consider which is the highest, you should ask these three questions. Is it connected with manifestation? If it is connected with manifestation, then karma yoga is the highest. If it is connected with the crowning experience, bhakti yoga, that which is foundational, jnana yoga. This is the interrelationship of these three yogas. And that is why Sri Krishna's teaching is a synthetic teaching. Put foundation at the right place. Put crowning at the right place. And put action in the right, in the middle, in which the highest manifestation can come only by action. That is why Sri Krishna will say that although knowledge is greater than action, action is greater than inaction. Very often when you are establishing knowledge, you become so quiet, that you cease to act. Therefore, Sri Krishna says, in manifestation, if you simply cease to act, that is not correct. You must act. In manifestation, go on acting. Even if you remain, if you think that you are quiet, you are breathing at least, which is an action. You cannot cease to act. Therefore, act rightly. And act rightly means, what is the right action? An action which is founded in knowledge and which is grounded in bhakti, that is the right action. You apply the right propositions, right hierarchy, and you will get complete satisfaction from all the statements of the Bhagavad Gita. Otherwise, people think that Bhagavad Gita contradicts itself at certain important phrases. Now it says Jnana Yoga is highest, then it says Karma Yoga is highest, then it says Bhakti Yoga is highest. But you must read carefully in what context what is highest. In foundation, knowledge is, action is not highest. In foundation, knowledge is the highest. Therefore, since the foundation is to be made in the beginning, it starts with Sankhya and speaks of the highest knowledge. He establishes the very thesis of knowledge first. And then even says that knowledge is far superior to action. It's perfectly correct. There's nothing wrong about it at all. But action is far superior to inaction. And the crowning of action is bhakti. That is why also if you see the whole structure of the Bhagavad Gita, it can be divided into three parts. The first six chapters, second six chapters, and the last six chapters. In the first six chapters, there is a synthesis of knowledge and action. On the basis of knowledge as foundation, and karma is a manifestation of that knowledge. That is how the two are reconciled. And the crowning, which is bhakti, he stated very briefly. If you read the first six chapters, there are only a few places where bhakti is mentioned. But at a very crucial place. If you read, for example, 61, verse number 61. In the first sentence you will find the word matvara. This is on page number 113. There is a word matvara. Mat means me. You do all your action matvara, devoted to. Now this is the only place in the second chapter where bhakti is indicated, but otherwise the whole chapter is connected with jnana and karma. So very rarely you will find the reference to bhakti in the first six chapters. It doesn't mean that there is no place of bhakti. It is reserved for a crowning position. In the next six chapters, there is a synthesis of knowledge and love. And there you will find plenty of bhakti, because there is a crowning movement which is described there, where knowledge and action reach their crowning point in bhakti. And that which is crowning point becomes a real motivation of action. Therefore, action is a crowning movement of the crowning motivation. This is the main substance of the last six chapters. When you are fully absorbed in, founded in knowledge, and when your motivation has reached the climax of love, then what do you want to do? It must manifest in highest action. And what is the highest action? The highest action is to become one in every way with the highest. And what is the highest? Highest is always Sachidananda. It is that which never dies and which is constantly motivated to act with Ananda. That Ananda which never dies manifests constantly, incessantly. Therefore, in the last six chapters, Sri Krishna says, become like me. In all your actions, in all your movements, become like me, Satchidananda. Therefore, the action will be, you will be like the divine in every way. Sarvabhavena, that is a very important term in the Bhagavad Gita. Sarvabhavena, in every mode of your being, in every mode of feeling, in every mode of action. Sarvabhavena. The other word is sadharmya. You attain to the very law of my being and action. As I am, so you become. Completely identified. That is the meaning of love. The crowning of love is to be like your beloved in every possible manner. And since the divine is constantly stable and constantly powerfully acting, your highest condition is what? To be constantly stable and to be constantly dynamic. In all these two states, the fundamental motive, the crowning thing is Ananda, in which there is no grief possible at all. Therefore, be like me, therefore you will be free from grief. Be like me, therefore you will not think of that which is not stable. You will constantly be founded in that which is stable. And be like me, therefore you will be always acting. Act victoriously, without any grief, and without losing your foundation. That is the highest of which Sri Krishna will speak at the end. But this is the starting point. Nasato vidyate bhavo nabhavo vidyate sataha. Without this foundation, there is no Bhagavad Gita. Therefore, this is one of the most important fundamental sentences of the Bhagavad Gita.
The sat and asat. Asat, that is nashwar, that is body. And sat is atma, which is paramatma. And that is permanent. That bhav also can...
No, there is a distinction between that which is and that which is not. The body is neither is nor... Asat here is that which does not exist at all, not even a body form. Here the distinction is very clear of between existence and non-existence.
Yes.
He has yet not spoken of Then you speak of the body. The distinction between the eternal and the body is the substance of between this verse number 16 and verse number 61.
61, yes.
What is the relationship between that which is and the body? Therefore, in 61 he speaks of the body, in what condition? Indriyani Sayamya. All the senses are to be controlled. And matvaraha asita matvaraha.
Yukta asita matvaraha.
So you become united with me and become my minded completely matvaraha. So there is still a lot to be learned. But first proposition is this. You might say this is the, when Sri Krishna starts his argument, this is the first dawn. You know, if you compare Bhagavad Gita with an orchestra of music, imagine that Beethoven is playing his musical piece. And there will be first a tremendous one stroke where 100 instruments will immediately burst into a sound and go into quietude. This is their sentence. This is the first dawn in which 100 vibrations are vibrating powerfully. And all that Sri Krishna wants to say is basically contained in this sentence. That's why the importance of this sentence. Mm-hmm. The first dawn of the argument of the Bhagavad Gita. If this sentence is taken out of the Gita, the whole structure will be finished. That's why I refer to this. Now come, as a result of this statement, certain minor statements, which are expository of this. And these minor statements, if you come to 20th verse, I am only taking those sentences which are of great importance. And as a student of the Bhagavad Gita, you should have a good mastery, so that you are really entrenched in the Bhagavad Gita. So I am taking those key sentences of the Bhagavad Gita. So, now, 20th verse in this chapter is also extremely, it is expository of that sentence. Na jayate mriyate va kadachit nayam bhutva bhavita va na puyaha ajo nityaha shashvato vayam pradhimana na hanyate hanyamane shaire. What does it mean? The self, that which is eternal, that which really exists, is never born, nor does it ever die. Having once born before, will it not be born in the future? The self is unborn, eternal, imperishable, and ageless. So the body is slain. The self is not killed. So now you can see the distinction now he begins to make between the that which is and the body. The body can be born. The body can be thrown out. The body can die. So there is a distinction between that which is and the body. Next one. Veda avinashinam nityam yaha enam ajam avyayam katham sa purusha partha kam ghatayati hantikam. O son of Pritha, if one knows that the self is indestructible, immutable, unborn, eternal, how can a person kill anyone or cause anyone to be killed? Your entire argument was, I'm going to kill Drona and Bhishma and Kripacharya and others. But if you are really established in the self, which always remains eternal, your whole argument vanishes. Basic argument. You will see the death and the killing in a different light altogether. You will not argue, I am killing or he is killed. This argument will not arise once you know this. There will be killing, there will be destruction, but you will have a different reason of it. You will find what is the position of killing or not killing in this world. Then you will come to the right conclusion.
Verse 16, what does Krishna mean by the non-existent? Because everything is, there is nothing.
That's right. That is why non-existent is non-existent, unthinkable. You can't even think of it.
You just clarified between the phenomena and like.
Yes.
So the non-existent is just non-existent altogether.
Altogether. It is not phenomenon. Phenomenon is a great proposition. What is phenomenon? Does it exist? Does it not exist? What is phenomenon? That we shall come to later on. Which is a very important question. In fact, all karma yoga is nothing but mastery over phenomena. You cannot be a karma yogi unless you have mastery over phenomena. Mere mastery over the eternal is only jnana yoga. Therefore, many jnanis are not powerful actors in the world. They have a hold on the eternal. They don't have the hold on the transient, on that which is phenomena. Therefore, karma yoga is necessary. Merely being a jnani, you cannot control the world. Although it is foundation, you should start with it. But it is not enough. A purna jnani, he is not one who only knows each other. Purna jnani is one who knows both the eternal and the phenomena. That is why when you come to the 7th chapter, in fact, jnana is fully expounded in chapter number 7, 8, 9, 10. What is jnana? And there, Sri Krishna will explain the relationship between the eternal and the phenomenal. It is there that we come to know, Sri Krishna will say in the 7th chapter, I will now give you without remainder, asheshena. When I have told you this, nothing remains further to be known. Here he doesn't say this. Here he is only making a foundational statement. In the 7th chapter, when he will say to Arjuna, what is full jnana? Jnana vijnanena saha. Not only jnana, jnana vijnanena saha. I shall tell you knowledge with all the phenomenal knowledge. The knowledge of the eternal and the knowledge of the phenomenal. Having known which, nothing will remain more to be known. Such a tremendous statement in 7th chapter. So 7th, 8th, 9th and 10th are great chapters of all that is to be known and their interrelationships. It's a beautiful fabric as it were. When you know that knowledge, the beauty and the wonder of the universe and the source of that beauty and the culmination of that beauty becomes clear. That is why in the 11th chapter is the bhakti, the highest manifestation of the divine. In which the bhakti reaches its highest climax. When you see the divine fully, as Muhammad says, to see God and not to fall in love with Him is impossible. If you see God and not to fall in love with Him, is impossible. So in 11th chapter, Sri Krishna manifests fully. And in that manifestation, all the doubts of Arjuna, all the arguments are melted. There is nothing but bhakti, complete. It is then that Arjuna says, I am now at your feet completely. So, the real knowledge of the eternal and the phenomenal is a great secret. That is why Sri Krishna says, Guhyatamam Jnanam. I will give you the most secret knowledge. This statement in 16, what you read is only the foundational statement. You start with it, then other things will follow.
7th, 8th, 9th, and 13th also need treatment.
Pardon?
13th also.
Last six chapters describe how you as an instrument have to become like the divine. And divine is Satchidananda. Therefore knowledge, action and devotion, all of them are there. And in the last six chapters, the supreme mysteries, how you can become the divine. In the seventh chapter, what is the supreme divine is given. But how you can become the supreme divine is given in the last six chapters. That is why last six chapters are culmination. Therefore, kshetra, kshetragya, the whole knowledge which is given there as a result of which, how you yourself are the knower, how you yourself are the field, how you yourself can become all, and yet you remain individual, how you become completely stable, overflowed with love and devotion, and you can act as victoriously, as masterfully as the divine himself acts. Madbhavaha, sarvabhavena, and sadharmyam. These are three keywords of the last six chapters. So that you become completely divine. And in that state, whatever action flows from you, you will not be doing, because you are no more, you do not remain you. You are yourself the supreme divine. You, this instrument is not yours. It is supreme divine's instrument, which is being used by the Supreme Himself. That is the basic teaching of the last six chapters. Then, verse number 24. This is also one of the very famous verses of the Bhagavad Gita. Achetyaha ayam adahyaha ayam akletyaha ashoshyaha evacha nityaha sarvagataha sthanaho achalaha ayam sanatana. Sanatana is eternal. This eternal self is achetya, can't be pierced. Ayam adahyaha, it cannot be burnt. Ayam akletyaha, it is something that cannot be touched. Ashoshyaha, it can never be dried. Nityaha, it is always there. Sarvagataha, omnipresent. Sthanaho, stable. Achalaha, immobile. This is the basic foundation. Sankhya, what is called Sankhya of the Gita is this. The knowledge of the foundation. As distinguished from all the rest. Then comes verse number 29. Ashcharyavat pashyati kashchit enam. Ashcharyavat vadati tathaiva chanyaha. Ashcharyavat cha enam anyaha shrunoti. Shrutva api enam vedam na cha eva kashchit. This eternal reality is so wonderful. Some look upon this self as a wonder. Some talk about him as a wonder. Some hear about him as a wonder. And yet having heard of him, none are able to understand him at all. Such is the wonder of the reality. In fact, this is the real state of the highest knowledge. I had once referred to you to as verse in the Rig Veda, which there is a dialogue between Indra and Agastya. And there, Agastya is trying to reach the highest. He wants to know the highest. And then he complains to Indra and says, "Oh Indra, you are my friend. Why are you hurting me? Why do you obstruct me?" So Indra says, "You are my friend. You say I am your friend, but you are not taking my help. You say I'm your friend, but you are only going straight to the highest. Look, my dear friend, I know the highest. And my function in the world is only one function. All those who want to know the highest, I am sent as a messenger, so that I can take him there. And you don't even think of me. So I'm not obstructing you. I am the only one who can take you there. So he says, na nunam asti no shva, kastadveda yat adbhutam. So he reveals what is the reality which is the highest. Na nunam asti no shva. It is not now. It will not be something that will be thereafter. In other words, that is eternal. Kas tad veda yat adbhutam. Who knows it? That which is adbhuta is wonderful. Having revealed to him, then Agastya realizes that he must take the help of Indra. So says, oh Indra, now you come. With all your powers, you and your Maruts, everybody come here and take me to the Supreme. Such is the process of knowledge. If you really want the Supreme knowledge, you must find one who knows the Supreme. And through the instrumentality of him, you will really be taken there. But even when you are taken there, the speciality of that knowledge is, it is so wonderful that you will constantly say, oh, I don't understand. You go on looking and looking and looking and looking indefinitely, infinitely. That which has no end. And every moment will be a moment of wonder. Adbhutam. Such is the nature of reality. If you really are in a good poetic state and you look at the dawn, go on looking. The mystery and the marvel. You are seeing it, therefore you can't say, I don't know. And yet every moment you confess you don't understand. This mystery and wonder of the dawn, you don't understand. That is the highest state of knowledge. That's why Sri Krishna says, when you really know it, it will be ashcharyava. So this is, you might say, one part of the teaching of the Bhagavad Gita, the knowledge of the eternal, which is Sankhya. Now Sri Krishna says that all that I have told you is with regard to knowledge. Now I shall tell you that which is regard to action. Because you are in action and you are, my answer is not a complete answer. I have only given you the first premise, major premise. Now I will develop it and give you further. So now in verse number 39, the second part of the argument begins. Esha te abhihita sankhye buddhir yogi vima buddhya yukto yaya partha karma bandham prahasyasi. I have told you the buddhi applied in Sankhya, that is in the path of knowledge. And there you come to know the eternal. Now the same buddhi you apply in the field of action. And when you apply that buddhi in field of action, then karma bandham, even if you do action, you'll be free from action. That is the mastery, that is the wonder of that field. Here there is only wonder of seeing. But here the wonder will be that even when you act, you will not be acting. You will be free from action. Then only you will become free from grief. Therefore I will reveal to you such a thing that karma bandham prahasyasi. This is the starting point of the karma yoga. But based, founded upon knowledge.
There only 41 I don't understand properly. Vyavasayatmika buddhi. 41. It's 41. Related with that, na?
Let us do now 41. because that is our starting point. Starting point of karma yoga is this. Vivasayatmika buddhihi eka yaha tirunandana bahushakahi anantascha buddhaya avyavasayana. He says, now you understand intelligence, intelligent will. Those who do the action properly, rightly, freely, without any bondage at all, omnipotently, you will see that characteristic of buddhi. That buddhi will be completely established, unflickering, unwavering, absolutely immobile. Vyavasayatmika means that which is engaged, concentrated. The buddhi has to be concentrated. Without the concentration, there is no proof to action. Just as reality is foundational, that which is eternal, fixed, even so, your intelligence must be fixed in the eternal. So long as your will is not fixed in the eternal, there is no karma yoga at all. Those who think that karma yoga can be done without knowledge, according to the Gita, that is wrong. Karma yoga must be established in jnana yoga. It is the foundation. When the buddhi is absolutely engaged in the eternal, then it becomes vyavasayatmika buddhi, buddhi which is engaged. Otherwise, our intelligent will is avyavasayikta. It is full of disengagement. It is scattered. If you look at our psychology is a scattered psychology, fleeting psychology. Now moves here, then moves there, and feeds to another, and then pursues still further, and there is no stability at all. So the basis of karma yoga is to attain to sthira buddhi. Let the intelligence be absolutely established. When the intelligence is not established, it becomes bahushaka. Multiple branching. This is what we are all the time caught in. What is karma yoga? Karma which is entangled into 101 or 1001 or millions and billions of things in which we are capable of entangling ourselves without knowing where we are and how we are and what for we are. We are simply engaged in one action after the other, and one action leads to another, and that leads to another, and we find ourselves suddenly into a terrible situation, as Arjuna was caught in this terrible situation. And then you say, I want to come out of it. And then you can't come out of it. This net is such a net that even if you want to come out of it, it's impossible. The grief, you cannot tear it away, saying, oh, now it is thrown out. Even if you want to throw it away, you can't throw it away. Grief is such a powerful element in our normal condition of bahushaka. Where the intelligence is not stable, grief is the only consequence. Because ananda is connected only with eternal. So unless you are entangled with the eternal alone, then only ananda will be there. In bahushaka, in the fleeting intelligence, you will never have. This is the starting point of karma yoga. That your intelligent will must be first of all founded in the eternal. If it is not so, it is bahushaka. And if it is multi-branch, you can never have peace. You can never be free out of it. Then comes the what is called one of the greatest sentences of Bhagavad Gita in 47. As I told you, I am marking out those sentences which are key sentences and over which you should have a real mastery. Now, when your intelligent will is fixed, then you will be a karma yogi. But what are the starting points of that intelligent will being fixed, even while you act? Here Sri Krishna gives the knowledge as to how you can do that. Karman eva adhikaraste ma phaleshu kadachana. Ma karma phala hetuhu bhuhu ma te sangaha hastu akarvan. This has been quoted very often as the fundamental teaching of the Gita, as the highest teaching of the Gita. Surely this is not the highest teaching of the Gita. This is the starting point, foundational teaching. The highest teaching of the Gita is given in the 18th chapter, not here. This is the foundational statement. The culmination, the highest statement of the Karma Yoga is in the 18th chapter, that we shall see later. But this is the starting point. If you want to make your intelligent will absolutely fixed, then you do one thing. Your intelligent will normally becomes multi-branched because of one important constituent of your activity, the desire to clutch at the fruit of action and to enjoy it. This is the psychological group that Sri Krishna expresses, that your intelligence becomes unstable. The main reason is that when you are acting, what happens to your psychology? Your attention is not on action. Your attention is to clutch at the fruit as soon as possible and to enjoy it. If I can get 5 lakhs today, by only this much effort, I am prepared to accept that. Because my interest is not in action. My interest is in getting 5 lakhs of rupees. That is the fruit I want to enjoy. As long as you are in this condition, your intelligent will can never become stable. So Sri Krishna says, if you really want to make your intelligent will fixed, then be engaged in action. And act in such a way that you do not want to clutch at the fruit of action. It's a very hard saying to the people. Because normally we act only for the sake of the fruit of action. And now Sri Krishna says you act, but do not desire to clutch at the results, the fruits of your action. Therefore, normally people strive to give up all action. This is all that will be done. Why act at all? If fruits of action are not to be enjoyed, why act at all? Therefore, Sri Krishna says, to action alone thou hast the right. First of all, realize that you have a right only to action. Over fruit, even if you desire, you have a right. Very often you will find that you act for one thing and something else comes out. You have no control. If the world is so constituted that even if you say, well, I want this result, I want to do this, you will find that result will be quite different. Or if it is the same that you wanted, you find that, oh, this is not what I really wanted. Having got the result that you wanted, you will find that it's there now in your hands. Then you find, well, this is not what I wanted. I wanted something else. There is a story in the Aitreya, in the one of the Brahmanas. There was a king called Harishchandra. And he had no child. So he said, I must have a child. At any cost, I must have a child. So he went round asking for the secret of getting a child. Then somebody told him, if you pray to Varuna, you will get a child. Why Varuna? Because Varuna is vast. The meaning of Varuna is that which is vast. In the vast, everything is contained. Therefore, if you go to the vast, anything that you want is available there. If you go to Varuna. So he was told, go to Varuna. So he went to Varuna and told him, I want a child. So Varuna said that, don't ask for it. Because it is not what you are worthy of. You are not destined to have it. He said, no, but I want a child. He said, all right, I'll give you a child on one condition. That as soon as you get the child, you disclaim the child. I'll give you a child, but disclaim the child. Offer the child to me back. Saying, this is my child, I give you back. On that condition, I'm prepared to give you the child. He was so desirous of the child, said, yes, I don't mind at all, I'll give you back immediately. I must have the child. So Varuna was pleased and gave him the child. So when the child was born, and Varuna came and said, now give me back. I have just begun to see my child. This is not all that I wanted. I really wanted to play with the child. I want to see him growing. So give me some time so that I can really enjoy the child. He said, all right, 1 year later I'll come. Again he came. Again asked for the child. He said, no. I still want to see going to education. I really want to see further about what happens to him. In this way, the child began to... Varuna was very wise. He went on saying, all right, see for yourself what happens ultimately. The child grew up, became 16, 17 years old. Then, this child came to know and told his father, what right had you to give myself to Varuna? I am born. Why should I be given away to Varuna? Promise Varuna, I have got to give you back to Varuna. He said, no, I am not going to obey you. He ran away from home. And then, he was told by some sage, Jara, Jara Eva, go on moving. When you go on moving, you will find a solution. In this world, there is only one secret. Jara Eva. As Sri Krishna says, Karma Eva. Your power is only action. Go on acting. Then you will find a solution. So he went on moving. Big dense forest, he met somebody. And said, you know, there is one important secret about pleasing Varuna. Instead of you, if somebody else gives himself, that will be alright for Varuna. You don't need to give yourself. Find somebody who will give, who will take your place, and Varuna will be satisfied. He was very happy that alright, I am at least not to be finished. There will be somebody else. Now, who is it in the world who is prepared to give himself in Varuna? So he got in search of that person. He met one individual who had three sons. Among the three sons, the eldest was the favorite one. The youngest was the dearest one. The middle one. He was not claimed so much either by father or mother. And that was a very wise boy. His name was Shunashefa. So the father said that I will give this son, provided I am given so much money. So this young prince was a prince. He said, doesn't matter. You took him to his father and said, look, here is a boy. Only pay him this much and I am free, you are free. We are all happy. So father gave the money. King gave the money to the father of his boy. Now the question was that this boy was taken to the sacrifice where Varuna was to manifest to take him back. Now the question was, who will be the one who will sacrifice him?
There was nobody available who will put him in the sacrifice.
So the father again said, I will be prepared to do it. But then, a greater rishi appeared. His name was Vishwamitra. And Vishwamitra said, I know the secret of giving, sacrificing, everything. He will be sacrificed and yet he will be saved. That is the knowledge that Vishwamitra possessed. Sacrifice him and yet he remains. Because he has the knowledge of the eternal. So, he comes to Shunasheva. And Shunasheva was asked, look, we are going to be sacrificed. Are you willing? He said, yes. Even in sacrifice, I remain. That was the knowledge he gained from Vishwamitra. Then, when Varuna appeared, he cut off the three cords in which he was tied and gave immortality. This is the story in Aitreya Brahmana. It is one of the most famous stories of Brahmana literature. It's a symbolic story. That actually, Shunasheva stands for the soul, for the self, which is always eternal. The cords, the three cords, are the cords of the body, life and mind, in which you are tied up. The immortal soul is tied up in body, life and mind, it has three cords. Once you know that you are eternal, the three cords are loosened. They no more bind you. And there is no death for you, you become immortal. All getting, this desire to get a son, is always riddled with a condition that afterwards you have to lose it. These human beings do not know. Human beings think that if I possess something, it will remain with me forever. But this is never going to be. All the fruits of action are transitory. And you always want to pluck them as if they are eternal possessions, but there is no eternal by nature. That is why Sri Krishna says, as far as the fruits of action are concerned, you have to have a different attitude towards fruits of action. Not that you should have no fruits of action. Every action is turned to a fruit of action. But let not the desire for fruit of action be your motive of action. Motive of action should be ananda. You should arrive at a point where you become like Varuna, in which everything is present. Now, when everything is present in you, the fruit that you are seeking is also present there. Having it, do you want to possess it now anymore? It's always there with you. When you act with the knowledge that whatever you want is already attained by you, then what will be the motive of your action? Not akarmana, not inaction, but
manifestation of ananda.
When you have in your consciousness something that you already possess, then the only thing that you can do is to give. When you possess something, the only thing that you can do about it is to give. Therefore, until you reach the point where you don't try to possess, but to give, when you reach that state of giving, then you are free from action. Then whether you give or not give, it doesn't make any difference. It's about everything in you.
That is to become like the divine. That is the real secret of karma yoga.
That to attain a state of consciousness in which you really know that there is nothing which is not attained by you. What you are trying to achieve is already attained by you. And yet, do not have inaction. When you already possess everything, then that motive of possessing is no more there. Then the motive will be different. What is that motive? To give, to manifest what you already have. In which, whether you manifest or not manifest, makes no difference to you. It's a real freedom. The real freedom of man's action is, when you do action or you don't do action, makes no difference to you. That is the action of freedom. Till that time you are bandhana. Your real mukti comes, you are really free only when you reach a state where it makes no difference to you whether you act or do not act, and yet you act. Not because of any compulsion. Simply out of joy, joy of action. That is why Sri Krishna says that you have a right only to action, not to the fruit of action. Therefore, for clutching at the fruit of action, do not be motivated by it. At the same time, do not therefore enter into inaction. Now, this is the real starting point of karma yoga. Everything is not told here. This is only the starting point.
But the example is so beautiful to understand this birth. Actually.
Now, 48. I'm sorry I'm taking too long a time, but I want to finish the argument. Yogastaha kuru karmani sangam tyaktva dhananjaya siddhi asiddhyoho samo bhutva samatvam yoga uchyate. When you have the consciousness where you know that only to action you have a right, then what will happen? You will be yogastaha. You will be sthira. Yogastaha kuru karmani. Then you do action. Be very stable. Sangam tektva, having no desire. Become equal to siddhi asiddhi. Whether it is achieved or not achieved, become equal to it. When you attain to that state, then you realize that you are now karma yogi. Samatva yoga uchyate. This sentence is one of the most famous sentences of the Bhagavad Gita. Samatvam yoga uchyate. When you become completely equal-minded, then you are said to be a karma yogi. When you do action or don't do any action, and yet you act, then there will be always samatva. Now, this sentence is based upon the next one. Durena hi avaram karma buddhi yoga dhananjaya. Buddhau sharam anvichya kripanaha palayetava. He says, jnana, buddhi, is much superior to karma, to action. Action is only subordinate, secondary activity. Primary is buddhi and yoga and knowledge. Therefore, buddhau sharam anvichya, go to the resort of buddhi. Make your buddhi stable. Karma automatically will be free once you do this. So he says karma is only secondary. Buddhi is far superior to it. Therefore go to the resort of buddhi and then act. Those who are not stable in their buddhi, they are kripanaha phalahetava. They become miserly seekers of phalahetu. Of the desire for the fruits. They are only misers. They are poor, pitiable, miserable people in this world, all the time trying to clutch at the fruits of action. Buddhi yuktaha, next one, 50. Buddhi yuktaha jahati iha ube sik sukrita dishkrite tasma yogaya yujyasva yoga karmasu kaukrasya. When you are fully stable in intelligence,
both will be transcendent. Therefore, you become fixed in yoga. And normal tendency is that you become very negligent about action. When you have neither desire for this nor desire for that, then normally the human motivation becomes so weak that even if you are asked to do something, we do like clerks to do in the government. All actions are done leisurely. Whether the file moves or does not move does not matter at all. As a result, there is no kaushalam. There is no proficiency in action. So in order to avoid it, Sri Krishna says, yoga karmasu kaushalam. Whether you are yogi or not will be known only when you do the action most proficiently. It is called yoga. So we have three criteria now for becoming a karma yogi. The buddhi should be established as a permanent staple. Secondly, you will be equal-minded, siddhi, asiddhi. And thirdly, you will still not be negligent to work, but will be proficient. When these three conditions are fulfilled, you have just started on the path of karma yoga. I think we should stop here today and go to the next literature.
You can use samatva yoga. And samatva yoga coming in a 13th chapter.
No. It is development. Here, samatvam is only when you are just free from clutches of desire. That one is when you see the divine.